We gained an hour of sleep this weekend.
Unless you're a parent or a band or a bartender, you get nothing.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gents, and welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast. We are streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. My name is Tom, and I am your host, and as always, I'm in the studio with my friends, starting with the first one on my right.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
Jay Bear.
And welcome you all to the dish. It's been a crazy weekend. It's been weird. And what the hell is a benton?
Benton?
Yeah, I don't know. You're a bartender? Benton?
Oh. Like, that was my dyslexia.
I thought he was saying like Spanish. Bartender and yeah. Parent in the yeah. Same word.
Panton.
Benton.
Benton?
Oops. Se jodió.
Se jodió. Yeah. Se jodió. It's fucked. So, ¿cómo estás, Nick?
Bien.
¿Estás bien?
Bien.
Sí. Sí.
Tired.
Sí, cansado.
Yeah, I had to work Saturday and Sunday this week, and I worked an event on Friday night, so I really didn't get a break.
Right. It's so typically when daylight savings time, because do people put an S at the end of daylight saving time? Daylight savings time.
Yeah.
When that ends, it just throws you into this whole, like, anytime you lose an hour or gain an hour, it doesn't matter on what end of the stick you're in.
It's like jet lag.
It's You're fucked for like a few good days.
Yeah. No, you wake up and you forget to change over your stove, but your phone says one thing, your stove says another, and you're freaking out. Like, I'm late for work or you're whatever it is. But that happens to me all the time. And it's just like this like internal panic.
Yes.
Oh, I know. I know. I
some
know the
cars
feeling.
Don't update automatically either, so you jump in the car and you're like, shit, I'm late again.
Yep.
And then you realize, right. Oh, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm. Now, and then you have, like, if you work at a bar, you understand this 100%. So you get those clients that at 2 o'clock in the morning, because daylight savings time ends exactly at 2 a.m. on Saturday into Sunday. So you get these bar patrons that want to be like, well, technically now it's 1 o'clock, so you shouldn't close.
Oh, 100%.
No, bitch, that's not how it works. You have to hit 2 a.m. first. So that means we're officially closed before it goes back to 1 a.m., which is why I think that a lot of states did it that way, especially states that have bars that close at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. on weekends.
Well, technically, we could have stayed open the extra hour.
No, only New Year's is the only time you're allowed to stay open an extra hour.
No, Dave was debating if he was going to do it. And I looked at him and I said, if you stay open, I'm going to grab my credit card machine, sit at the corner of the bar, have a beer, close out my tips, and walk out the bar.
Because, you know, technically, he wouldn't pay you for that extra hour because he'd be like, well, it's still 1 o'clock.
Exactly.
No, he'd probably pay me less.
Right. No, I don't think so. Here's the thing. I think that a lot of people tend to do things that they shouldn't be doing, but they do it anyway.
You might be right.
I don't think you can stay open past 2 a.m. That's the law in Connecticut, unless it was New Year's. Yeah. On New Year's Eve, you can do that into the new year, but you can't do that any other day. And I just think he takes a little bit of liberty in doing certain things because, you know, of who Dave is.
No rushing.
Yeah.
But finish your drink.
Make me some money. Yeah.
You were 100% right, though. I had like 4 different people say, no, it's 1 o'clock now. I was like, honey, we're closed.
Yeah, we're done.
Mm-hmm. And we close early
every
tonight.
Year, every year.
And let me tell you, I was in a weird mood on Saturday. Like, I was happy to be there. I don't know what was going on. It was weird.
Who did you work with?
I worked with Joseph.
That's probably why.
No, not really. But like, I don't know. I was just in a good mood. Like, I had gotten enough sleep and whatever it was. And I was really nice to everybody. And then at the end of the night, of course.
Did they up your dosage?
Maybe.
I'm just checking.
Maybe. I did go back. No, that's a story for another time. But at the end of the night, I had no issues with anybody. People were tipping great. And then at the end of the night, some kid was like, just sitting there. It was like 1:15, no, 2:15, technically 1:15. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And just sipping his drink. And I said, hey, buddy, you know, we're closed. He's like, well, I got to pee. I was like, all right, go to the bathroom. But then you got to go. And he literally went to the bathroom. I picked up his drink and I poured it out because
we're closed.
Uh-huh. And it's illegal to keep drinking after the closing hour.
Right.
And he came out and he was so pissed. Like, straight up, one of those situations where he's like, I'm going to fucking punch you in your face. You got to check yourself. I know Dave. And I just looked at him and I was like, buddy, I've known Dave for 8 years. I've worked here for 8 years. He picked up a towel and threw it at me. Dave grabbed him by the neck and he said, you're out for life. Oh, it's like, oh, you know, God. Dave.
Oh, you know Dave. All right.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, you know, I feel sorry for bartenders sometimes when things like this happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, I said to Dave, I was like, Dave, I'm going to kill him if you don't do something. And he's like, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I hate that name-dropping bullshit. Right. It's just, it drives me. And they do that shit to me at work, too.
You know, it's like a lot of people don't realize that as a bartender, you have a right to
Refuse service
to someone who's intoxicated. Mm-hmm. And they'll immediately be like, well, I know the owner. I'm like, well, go to the owner. I don't care what the owner tells me. I'm the bartender. Mm-hmm.
That's what I did with the cute boy
if
last night.
If something happens to you, while you're out there, you go home, you're intoxicated, you get into an accident, you kill yourself or kill someone, I, the bartender, can be liable.
Yeah. No, actually, it's funny that you say that because somebody last night left the bar and I didn't realize they were driving and I walked outside and saw them in a car and they had asked another patron to move their car and I looked at the patron, I'm like, why did you fucking move your car? You should have just left him blocked in. Like, he should have not been behind the wheel of a car.
Right.
And that's at the end of the day, it's on me.
Right. But it's a catch 22 because you don't know. Like, I'm not going to sit here as a bartender and be like, are you driving? Are you driving?
Sometimes
are you
I
driving?
Do.
You're like, and ask everyone that is coming into the bar whether or not they're driving. Right. I feel that as a human being, you should be responsible for your own actions in a sense. But, you know, the law is the law. And if something happens, you're responsible. You can end up being liable.
I will say, like, the person came in and seemed fine, only had one drink, didn't even finish it, and was not okay. And so at the end of the day, since I served the last drink,
right,
I'm responsible.
Right. And, you know, that's the whole, you know, up in the air, catch 22 type of thing. It's like, you just really don't know how people are going to react to alcohol.
I mean, and you don't know whether they were drinking before or they popped a few pills before they walked in. And now...
That happened on Saturday.
That half a drink will fuck them up.
Yeah, no, we had, I don't know if I should be talking about this, but we had these really nice guys. They came in and they were sitting at the bar. They were so fun, so nice. And then, you know, they had a couple drinks and then they were like, oh, we're going to go upstairs. They walked outside and they were outside probably like 5-10 minutes. They came back in. They went upstairs. And evidently when they walked back in, I don't know if they popped a pill or something, but I was like, all right, guys, you need to get a hotel. They could not drive.
Right. And it's so weird. I mean, we've had experiences with personal friends that they're fine 1 minute and then the next minute they're just gone. They just went straight south. I mean, they literally, like, what do you call that when you migrate? They migrated south. Fast. And
quickly.
You're just like, no, there's a bed. Get in there.
Expeditiously.
Right.
Anyway.
It's insane. But anyway, the time change in itself, it's just like, and then the thing is too, it's like you're thrust into darkness, right? Because we're used to, during daylight DST, daylight savings time, it's later. It's lighter later in the day. And so you get to come home from work and sort of kind of decompress. And if you want to go sit outside, there's still some sunlight. You can, you know, grab a cocktail or something. And then the first week in November comes and boom, it's like 3:30. It's dark. Uh-huh. And you're like, oh my God. And then the thing is, it's like you wake up and go to work in the dark and you leave work and come home in the dark. And it's like,
It's depressing.
For me, there is a level of depression associated with that. And there are people in areas of the world that live in places and where they only see sunlight.
Seasonal depression. It's true.
Well, here Alaska. We are.
Certain people in northern Alaska will go through like 6 or 8 months of darkness and then like 4 months of complete sun. I think Hans had mentioned that it's very similar because of the way Sweden, how it lands in northern part of the northern globe, that you experience that. You have certain areas of these countries that border the polar cap that have
like probably like 4 hours of sunlight,
right? Or there's like 20 hours of sunlight in like 4 hours of like
opposites.
What do they call that? Twilight darkness. Yeah, so it's really not dark, and so people have to like buy like blackout curtains and stuff just so that you could be able to have some sort of like rhythm.
I experienced that when we traveled to Alaska in 2012 and it was 10 p.m. and it was like midday.
Oh my God.
It's insane.
And I'm literally sitting in the hotel room looking out of a window watching people playing baseball in the park at 10 p.m.
That's so crazy.
And I got back. It took me like 2 weeks to kind of like fall back into into a regular sleeping pattern. And now, like, right, I think this daylight savings time this past weekend, it's got everybody fucked up. I'm fighting allergies, so I'm already fucked up as it is.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
People they did badly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And look at me now. I was fine, and boom. In 10 minutes, I'm barely breathing on my
nose. We still have leaves on trees.
Yeah.
It's November 8th already.
It's
crazy. And that's only because we had a very, very wet summer. We had a very wet summer, an unusually warm summer, and muggy. And I evidently the vegetation in this side of the world got enough to sustain it a little bit longer than usual.
Yeah, my hibiscus plants were still flourishing like 4 days ago.
Yeah, I brought mine in, my tree.
Are in the yard. They seasonal. They stay out there.
And they come back?
Yeah, I just cut them down, and that's how they come back every year.
Oh, nice. I wish mine would do that. I have a hibiscus tree. Yeah, it's a Hawaiian hibiscus tree, so I have to bring that one in because it won't survive the cold winters. But it sucks, and this time of year really gets me very tired all the time. Like, I feel like, you know, leaving, when we eventually do go back into the building, leaving, oh, it's so bad.
Yeah.
And it's like you get out and you're like, you feel like it's 10 p.m. and you're just like groggy and tired and run down, and you don't have ambition or energy to do anything.
No.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad. Yeah. And then, you know, and then you got to go pick up all those leaves. I hate it. I really do. So I usually take the week of Thanksgiving off, which is coming up. So I will let the yard do whatever it's going to do. And then that week I'll just go out there every day, spend 2 or 3 hours in daylight and do what I need to do to clean everything up. But I hate it. It sucks.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah.
Speaking of which, are we taking any time off those 2 weeks?
I think we are, because you're going to be away 2 Mondays.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking that probably the Monday of the week of Thanksgiving, you're gone. That week I'm off.
The 22nd and the 29th.
Right? Let me see. So that way we can just sort of kind of set the expectations for our listeners when they can expect us not being on air. So I'm thinking we're probably going to end up taking the 22nd off. And then on the 29th, we'll sort of kind of...
Chris will probably be available on that day.
Make it work and come back. Or vice versa. Flip it. If Chris can come in on the 22nd, Jay can be here. You're going to be with your family in Florida. And who is she kidding? She's going to call anyway. And then we'll just take the 29th off.
I will not call.
You're lying.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. So for all of you that are experiencing this whole down part of this week,
onset of seasonal depression, because that's all it is.
We see you. Yeah. We see you. We feel you. We know exactly what it means. And we're looking forward to December 21st.
Absolutely.
When the days start to get longer again.
That's right. Winter solstice. That means we start gaining daylight time. Mm-hmm. And that makes me excited. And this upcoming year in 2022, I think we're going to have an in-person St. Patrick's Day parade.
Crazy.
I'm excited for that. It better be fucking lit. I mean, I want to see everybody throwing up on the sidewalks.
It's been a while. It's been a while since we've done that.
I have seen that far too many times.
So yeah. I think I'm just going to bring my dogs with me and just bring them to my mom's house and say, hey, you watch the dogs all day. I'm going to come in here and just crash on your couch drunk.
Do you remember? When we first started the show, the first St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, my God.
You weren't doing care. You were just out drinking. And we all went back to your place and recorded a hot mess of a show.
It was a hot. It was
I don't even think we aired it.
No, it was so bad. We didn't air the episode. And then we redid it. So here's what happened. We recorded an episode drunk as a skunk. 2:30 in the morning at this point. We were done. We listened to it.
I hosted because I bartended that night. So I was the most sober one. And you were a hot mess. So I literally hosted the show for you.
She did. And so the first episode that we recorded was a hot mess. So we decided that we weren't going to air that one, but I saved it anyway. And that we would re-record it. And we literally sat there till 4 in the morning and re-recorded the episode in our condition. But then, you know, we put out the hot mess of an episode that was a second one. Oh my God. It was great. I loved it. It's still on our website.
It was so funny. Yeah,
the drunken episode, we called it.
Yeah.
And then the following St. Patrick's Day celebration, I ended up working because it fell. It always falls on a Sunday.
I think it was karaoke.
And I had this headpiece.
Oh, my God.
I looked like the Puerto Rican Predator. It was freaking hilarious.
It's kind of like become like a staple where on St. Patrick's Day, we always have a sleepover.
Right, right. And
why not? I mean, that's... I remember the St. Patty's Day we hung out and...
Oh, my God.
That was... You know,
yeah.
We're a hot mess.
We were at... My wife and I were at your house at 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Mm. See, but the thing is...
And we drank until the bars closed.
Yeah. That's what it is. That's what everybody does.
The thing is that back then I was living in downtown New Haven, so I could walk. It was only four blocks to the event. Now I live outside of downtown and I have to drive. And so I really have to make plans. Because you don't want to get in the car in that condition.
No. Find a Yaley. No.
And, well, now my mom lives in downtown, so I can just, go there and leave the dogs with her so that I don't have to drive back home. Because that's the other thing that I used to do. We used to go, I would start drinking, then around 5 or 6, I would come back, feed my dogs, let them out, and then go right back out and then go to work.
Yep.
And navigating, because, they shut down all these streets in downtown New Haven. Mm-hmm. And navigating and trying to get there to put your car in a strategic place with your equipment and hoping that nobody steals it before your work time arrives. Because, I run karaoke on Sundays. So I have to bring my computer and my mixer and all that stuff. And it stays in the car. So eventually I just started bringing it into the bar. But with all those crazy people, you're like, this is...
Yeah, no, that's the babysitting shift.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that's always fun. But anyway, we're into the darkness. Deep, 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 deep. So we have a couple of stories that we're going to jump into because obviously this is the dish. Enough about us. Let's talk about what's happening around the world and around other people. So I'm not sure if all of you know, there was this huge gang style shootout at a resort in Cancun. And apparently, two different factions of cartels were having disagreements and a shootout broke out on a beach in front of a resort in Cancun. And it so happens to be the same fucking resort that my family was at because my cousin was getting fucking married. I cannot. And of course, so, you have these phone calls from aunties and cousins and oh my God, it's complete mayhem. We're all running. We're all locked down. And I was in the pool with my granddaughter. And I'm then how did you get out the pool? And, and did you run? It's scary. What would you do? And the thing is that this is a very well-known resort where they do a lot of gay events. So during this particular week, there was a gay event happening, so there's a lot of hot, sexy men in some of these videos.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, leave it to my family to schedule a wedding during a gay event at a resort.
But yeah.
How would you react if a shootout like that broke out in in a foreign country?
Well, I mean, I did have that one experience when I went to the Global Citizens concert in New York.
Right. She lost her phone and somebody found it.
It was so bad.
Oh.
You got it back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, what happened was it was in Central Park. In Central Park, and it was packed to the gills with people, families, kids, everything. It was insane, but a lot of fun. But then, I don't know what happened up front, but what one of those a metal guard rails like fell over, and it sounded like a bomb went off. And it was
just scattered,
but like we were all packed together. So I, you know, you just see a literal sea of people. You have like a second to react. Paul was lifted up.
She was tiny at the time, so she could fly with the wind.
Literally lifted up and like crowd surfed out, and I went straight down. And I'm laying on the ground thinking, if I don't get the fuck up, I'm going to get trampled to death. This is how people die.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I somehow forced myself up and I just started running, and I ended up hiding behind a tree. But in that process, I lost my phone and I lost the people I was with, and everybody was freaking out. So when things calmed down and it had it basically cleared out, they said, you know, whatever, everything's fine. And then I'm walking around looking for my phone. I can't find it anywhere. Somebody had found my phone, and I guess Paul's sister Jessica was calling me to try to find me. And the guy, I don't know why, that was so nice of him, brought my phone, met her, brought it to her. And then I saw some girl with her phone, and I said, hey, can I use your phone to call my phone? Called my phone. She picked up. I'm like, where the fuck are you? I was so sore. Like, my body was killing me. But, like,
I don't know.
In those moments, I don't really think, like, you just react.
Adrenaline kicks in.
And I don't think I've ever run that fast. And girl, look at me.
You're on autopilot. Your body, it's an innate reaction.
Fight or flight.
Right. No, and when the body realizes that something is happening and you are potentially in danger, it takes over. Mm-hmm. Like, you really don't have control in those situations. And the only time you can overcome that to an extent in taking control of the situation is always keeping in mind and doing drills. This is why, for example, fire drills in schools and elementary schools and middle schools.
Well, now they're doing, like, what are the
bomb.
They're doing in school shooting drills.
Right.
Yeah, what do they call it? Shelter in place.
Yeah, right. Like, how traumatizing. Yeah.
As traumatizing as it is, though, this is how you can fight the urge to let this situation and your body take control of how you are going to react in a situation, which is why they do it.
I remember in the 80s when I was in grade school, we were still doing the
earthquakes.
Yeah, the whole hide under the desk.
Not me.
Crap. Yeah. Well, you weren't born in the 80s, were you?
Yeah, I was.
What year?
87.
No, that was before you.
Yeah,
before.
You're still swimming around in daddy's
balls.
Ew.
Skidamarinky dinky ding. Skidamarinky ding.
I'll tell you one thing. I'll never forget looking around when I was looking for my phone and walking around. I'll never forget the shit that you. There was literally people left everything.
Yeah,
their bags, their phone. There were shoes everywhere. I mean, I'm telling you, they just got up and left.
Yeah.
It was insane.
And the experience in itself, I can imagine, was very traumatic for you. And afterwards, you think back and you laugh and like, oh my God, ha ha ha. Why did I react that way? But, you know.
I didn't laugh when I was limping off that fucking train. I got trampled, motherfucker.
Yeah.
How would you react in a situation like that?
I grew up in New York, so a lot of the times,
fight or flight.
Blah, yeah, you hear the noise, you kind of look and find a place to hide and you know, get to some sort of safety.
Right.
But yeah, you never know. I mean, and usually when you're with friends, people don't stop and try to fix. They hear the noise. Let's get out of here. Let's figure it out later.
Well, it's crazy too, because in the like current climate that we're in, when something like that happens, you just...
It turns into pandemonium because
you just assume it's a shooting or a bombing or a...
Right. Because we've seen how destructive, you know, humans can be when left to their own vices. And, you know, now, you know, with social media, you see how instant things are, right? And so you have an advantage that people maybe back in the 80s and 90s and even into, like... I would say between 2000 and 2005 didn't have. We didn't have the advantages of iPhones and social media and things like that that would immediately warn you of something happening where you could take action and shelter in place or do something to protect yourself.
Yeah, I think post 9/11.
Yeah.
Everything changed.
Yeah,
right. You know, and I remember just after September 11 happened, we had a trip scheduled to Puerto Rico. It was like 4 months out.
Right.
Getting on the airplane, I've never had as much anxiety in my life. That was the first thing.
Right.
Then we were staying in Isla Verde. Mm-hmm. In a hotel that we were staying at, and we didn't realize the hotel was adjacent to the airport. Mm-hmm. We got there, we got shit faced the first night. We all fall asleep. 6 a.m. All you hear is the rumbles of an engine from an airplane landing in the fucking airport. Talk about 9 people jumping out of bed, all New Yorkers. At the time,
going bananas.
Yeah, we shit our pants first thing in the morning.
So a lot of those hotels in Isla Verde, they all literally just run the whole corridor of the landing strip for the airport.
It's funny because I live closer to East Haven, and there's an airport over there, and flights come over my townhouse all the time, and every time it happens, I think of 9/11.
Yeah,
and it's so weird that it still triggers that for me, but like I see a plane, if it's too low or if I feel like it's too low, it's just like I'm right back there.
Right.
Yeah. And it's crazy because you're thinking about it. This shit happened 20 fucking years ago already. It's insane.
Yeah.
And you know, people that were directly affected. I had a lot of people that I went to school with, friends that were in the towers that died. I knew at least 8 people that I know of. I've never gone through all the pictures. It's like heart wrenching to you realize that, you know, oh shit, I went to school with this kid since second grade.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Second grade, middle school, high school. We basically grew up together, you know, and then they're gone. It's just,
it's crazy.
Yeah. It was a bit of a reality check. And I think after that, anything that occurs, and then you have all these random bombings that have happened, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tennessee with that camper and the marathon, the Boston Marathon bombing with those, you know, so now everywhere you go is like super vigilant.
Right. This past week.
We're very hyper aware now of, and that hyper awareness leads us to a point of paranoia.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Literally this past week, what day was it? It must have been, I think it was Friday. I was working, I work downtown now. And somebody called in a bomb threat to Yale.
Yes.
10 mm-hmm. different locations.
Right.
And when I say they shut the fucking city down,
yes.
Where the theater is, from that street over and up, you could not go anywhere.
Oh, I know. I know.
It was insane. You couldn't get out. You couldn't get in. Yeah. It was crazy.
I had just left the area when that occurred. Had I been there, I would have been stuck though in my work truck.
Hey, listen.
I know Tony, my friend Tony, who works at Yale for IT. Mm-hmm. He had to leave his car. His vehicle was blocked in. He had to call his husband to come and get him.
Yeah.
He had to come back the next day for his car.
They evacuated Yale. They evacuated Gateway. They evacuated a lot of the restaurants. I mean, it was insane.
Yeah, even York Street. Like the street on York, mm-hmm. you know, where we turned to go to Partners, that street was closed all the way up.
Oh, yeah, no. Literally from college all the way up.
Yeah.
You could not go anywhere.
Yeah.
It was like Chapel and College was the...
Yeah. The lines, the barrier lines, everything was shut the fuck down.
It's insane.
I walked outside. I'm like, what is with the traffic?
Yeah.
And somebody was like, Nick, there's a bomb threat. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yep.
Why am I still here?
No, but unfortunately, that's the world that we live in today. And, you know, you just have to learn how to prepare and navigate the complexities of being stuck in place when you can't move and have a plan. That's all we can say. You know, think of the scenarios and how would you react, and consistently thinking about those things will allow you to actually put yourself in a position in where you don't allow adrenaline to take over and not have control of the situation when you're trying to find safety. And instead of, you know, going into like this pandemonium state of, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm just going to run.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you might be running into danger. So it's,
remember when we were at CFC and the earthquake hit and the whole building was rocking.
Literally.
And what?
In downtown New Haven. Yeah. Downtown New Haven. I was working on the 14th floor You were on the fifth,
call
right?
Center, yeah.
You were on the fifth floor. I was on the 14th floor. I had to come down, like, so there's 14 floors, and then you have the mezzanine and then the main lobby. I had to come down all those stairs. And then as you're going through the stairs, every time you came to a door, you had to put your hands out because people were just pushing those doors open.
They were trying to evacuate the building. As it's rocking, because it rocked for a couple of minutes.
Yes, it did.
And then we were being told by supervisors, stay where you're at. We will let you know when you can leave. And people were like, fuck out of here.
And the thing is, no. So they have a controlled release when things like that happen. When there was an emergency in that building, this is the financial center right in downtown New Haven, right next to City Hall.
Yes.
There is a controlled release protocol in place for that building. So when something happens, all the top floors start coming down first. And as they start emptying out, the next floor can start going down. These people didn't care. Doors were slamming open. And if you didn't have your hands out and you were trying to walk down these stairs, you would get hit in the face with a door.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. And then those doors become heavy because there's a centralized airlock system in these doors, in these stairways.
Yeah.
Right. And they're built that way. So if there's a fire, you're safe in the stairway as you're making your way down. So when you try to open the door,
the vacuum
pushes against you. It's so fucking weird, but I mean, that situation in itself. And then we just sat outside for like, I lived in downtown at the time, so I just walked home.
Yeah.
I was like, screw this. I mean, if I'm not going to sit on the green for 4 hours when I live a block away from here.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Goodbye. But anyway.
Yeah.
That
conversation went.
So an update on my family. My little cousin ended up getting married. You know, they went back to their normally scheduled program. Everyone in the resort was safe. The individuals that perpetrated the crime were captured. There were two deaths, unfortunately, due to the shootout that occurred on the beach, but none of them were due to someone being a patron of this resort. But everyone's fine. So, but I just thought it was just freaking crazy. Freaking crazy. So, can we cover one more before we go to break?
Yeah, sure. I got to pee, so I'm going
to. All right. So I'm going to toss it over to you.
Actually, I wanted to kind of cover mine back to back. So why don't you do the update?
Okay. I can do that. So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about an individual. His name was Zachary Wilmore. He was a senior at Rockbridge High School in Columbia, Missouri, who made quite the splash when he was crowned as homecoming queen at his, what do they call these?
Homecoming?
Is it? No, but don't they do homecoming queen?
And king?
And king. But don't they do that during prom?
No, that's during homecoming.
Okay, well, during homecoming. So he ended up being crowned and, you know, it was a big thing. You know, he got a lot of like positive support from the community, his school, people.
His friends.
But then, of course, as always, the gay teen had to literally come back and clap back at hateful adults who were upset at the fact that he was crowned homecoming queen. So his victory was celebrated by the media, his fellow students, LGBTQ people, and suspects quickly started insulting the teen. But Whitmore, who has over a million followers on TikTok, wasn't willing to take the abuse and shot back with a video that spelled it out plainly for his haters. Is the video on here?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. So we're going to play the audio of this video and hopefully... is it this one?
Yeah. Right?
Okay, so let's play this and listen to Zachary Wilmore in his own words.
Where? Because homecoming is quite literally a popularity contest. A lot of your guys' main points in the video of me winning was that I was stealing some little girl's dream, quote unquote. It was some little boy's dream too, and that little boy was me. You guys are hiding your hatred and homophobia in a thick layer of fake empathy. I'm still friends with all the candidates who I ran for homecoming royalty, which, for the record, there are boys and girls both running. There could only be one winner. It could have been a straight girl. It could have been a straight guy. It happened to be me, which is fine. The problem is you guys commenting hate under my video and your inability to let things change. People were happy for me. You guys weren't because of your fixed mindset. Now that that's settled, let's move on, okay? To why I decided to be called a queen instead of a king when they announced me for homecoming royalty. Quite honestly, it was an Instagram poll. I was like, should I be called a queen or a king? And everyone was like, queen would look so much prettier on the sash. I was like, you guys are so right. So that's what I did. Why did I decide to wear a dress? I felt pretty in a dress. Gold is my color. We love it. Anyways, thank you guys for all the support under that video and the support for me in general. I really do appreciate it. And for all the haters on my page, thank you guys so much for boosting my video. Because of you guys, I have an interview with NBC. We love, love, love it. I'll see you guys on TV. Kiss, kiss. I love you guys so much.
Nice.
That was what a way to sort of kind of like really just say, fuck you haters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So your thoughts, Jay?
That was good. That was amazing.
Right?
And that's the way it should be. I really love the way he so eloquently addressed it without hate speech.
Exactly.
And he wasn't nasty. He wasn't any of that. He really just basically just came out and said, hey, listen, you guys hating on me got me an NBC freaking
interview
coming up. It's all wonderful. It's a win-win situation. We were happy for him then. We're even more happier now. The fact that, you know, he got crowned homecoming queen and that he was able to take control of that situation and fire back at his haters.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you how strong of an individual he is.
Right.
Mainly because a lot of people, I mean, you know, we hear it all the time, you know, people are getting bullied online constantly.
Right.
There are all these haters and trolls that are just finding these stupid reasons to come at people. And what he did was find strength in the fact that he has so much support and then come back out. And like Jay said, do it in a way that he's not denigrating anybody.
Right.
He wasn't doing it in a hateful way. He was very, like, for lack of a better term, educational about it.
Right.
And honest and true. And the fact that he did it, it's just beautiful to see somebody that has the support, feels strong enough to be able to come out there and do something like that.
I just love when he says, you know, well, I felt beautiful in a dress, and it was gold, my favorite color. And I just thought it was my color.
He looked amazing.
Yes, he did. Yes. He looked absolutely amazing. And, you know, good. The thing is that when you think about in the story where this occurred, I mean, this occurred in the state of Missouri, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Columbia, Missouri. Like, when someone says Missouri, I don't think of an LGBTQ plus friendly place.
No.
That's not the first thing that comes to mind. So the fact that this is happening in a little town called Columbia, Missouri is a big thing. This is happening in middle America, per se, which is typically not a very gay friendly space in general. And so the fact that that's happening, it's great.
Yeah.
So,
and I like also that he addressed, you know, where he's saying, you know, a lot of you are saying that I stole some little girl's dream.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I wasn't the only one who ran for this position. There was more than just one guy.
Yeah.
Who ran for it, which is great because it shows that, you know, the support is there, especially within the school system.
Yeah.
You know, where these teens are feeling safe enough to do something that they feel passionate about. That's amazing.
Right. And he had the support of his school and probably his fellow students. So this is a non-issue. So all you haters out there, just go bury yourself under a rock and shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Like, why? Just leave it alone. Stop trolling people. It doesn't affect you.
Oh, Lord have mercy. You know, but again, this is the world that we live in. And it's stories like this that make us feel good and glad that and they're the reason why we do the show. It's just to inform you listeners of what's going on around in our spaces, because it is important to stay afloat of the things that happen in our community. Mm-hmm. So, break.
Yeah.
Shall we do that? All right. Well, listen, we are going to leave you with some music. And when we come back, we have more Dish. Stick around. Here we go.
She was waiting by the back door, said, babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, cause we gotta go now, cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names, yes, they're coming, just the same. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife. They're coming, well, they're coming down the road. Yes, they're coming, truth be told. come in just the same. They got a knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies, and they're talking so much hateful bullshit they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming, well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming, no surprise. And with so much terror in our past, how are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never the land to sell or trade. Station where we can get on that train, head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming, well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming just the same.
Welcome back from the break. That, of course, was the amazing Amanda Barrick with Wastelands. That is the track that she released as her first solo single, and it's also the name of the album itself, and it's available on all the major music streaming services. Go out there and support your LGBTQ plus artist. But we love her. Anyway, welcome back. We left you with two stories we talked about. We talked about, obviously, the gay team claps back after winning Homecoming Queen, and the issue and all the craziness that my family experienced in Cancun. And now we're going to, of course, toss it over to Trish, because she's got two stories that we're going to talk about, one of which is probably going to get us a little worked up. But nonetheless, Trish, it's yours.
So here I am again to talk about Milo. How low can you go?
What's the last name?
Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos, yeah.
Yiannopoulos.
He's such a cunt.
I mean, I'm sorry. You crushed it. You're right.
Yeah, he just is. I'm sorry.
So now he's claiming to be...
Who broke his heart?
What
guy broke this guy's fucking heart?
Probably his dad.
That he's got such hate going.
Right. I mean, it's literally like this man is so hateful against his own community. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But anyway, proceed.
So he hosted a Pray the Gay Away event at Penn State. Penn State had brought, well, a group at Penn State brought him on and paid him $18,000 to come and speak.
So it makes sense now. It's all about the money.
Okay. And then he also made, like, I think another 6,000 in ticket sales or something like that. So he had about 250 people show up for this Pray the Gay Away event.
So Penn State, are you paying attention? This is scary. You had how many people showed up?
250.
250 people showed up for this event to Pray the Gay Away at Penn State University, a very popular university. Right.
So this was, I guess, a fundraiser for his new conversion therapy venture.
In Florida.
Before I forget.
Of course.
Anyway, what is amazing is that the student population petitioned to have him basically removed or not come. They got over 13,000 signatures.
Yes.
And then on top of that, when the university basically said, you know, he has the right under the U.S. Constitution, First Amendment, we can't actually not let him come here and speak. They all, you know, this group of people, they realized that, you know, that is very true. But right. what they did was come out in droves to protest.
Which is great, because that's also a constitutional right mm-hmm. of ours, the right to peaceful protest. And for those of you that are not aware, certain schools, if you receive state or federal funding, and you're considered either a state school or a federal funding school, you have to. You're not a private institution and can't deny someone an opportunity to speak in such an institution. So Penn State, being Pennsylvania State University, is a state university receiving funding from the state, potentially also from the federal government, which means that they also have to let this asshole speak.
So there were 250 students that paid and attended. And guess how many people showed up to protest?
All 250,000?
No.
I wish it was.
More than 1,800 students
that's great.
Showed up.
So that's probably about 5 times more than what actually attended.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And yeah. so
no, it's pretty amazing, but the fact that this guy who is claiming to be anti-gay mm-hmm. is going around and now promoting a new conversion therapy and raising money for said conversion therapy is, especially in today's climate, what the fuck?
Right.
It's so bad. Like, this, what is wrong with this guy?
And here's the thing.
Florida, for starters.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Well, this is not his first time trying something like this, right? He's been very controversial for the past, you know, 6+ years. I mean, we've been on the air coming up on a little short under 5 years. Mm-hmm. And since year two, we've been talking about the audacity of this individual who claims to be a part of the community and now is, you know, doing stuff like this. It's like, what the fuck, dude? And not only that, is think of the hurt that he is causing by suggesting that you could do something like pray the gay away. There's nothing wrong with being gay.
Beyond that, it's like, think of what he's doing to parents who are struggling with their LGBTQ plus kids,
right?
Saying, I'm not gay anymore.
Right.
Honey, you're still gay.
Right.
It doesn't just go away.
And
the only difference now is that his wife is pegging him. That's the way I fucking see it.
No, it's that he's just doing it on the side.
Wasn't he getting married or some shit like that?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah. I think,
well, if he ain't gay, what is he?
So you know that there
ex-gay.
Right. You know that there are people out there that actually will start like controversial shit just to make money. But really probably don't believe that, you know, what they're selling, yeah. what they're pushing out there.
Yeah,
I mean, our ex-asshole president was the exact same way. He didn't believe in the fucking university, but he created one anyway and, you know, defrauded like thousands of people. But I think that this man is literally gaslighting the mm-hmm. community. He's using the community as a means to make money.
Yeah. But I think what's really special about the fact that they had these, you know, 1,800 protesters where they weren't just protesting. Yes, they were civil. They were orderly. There were no issues, which was amazing. But on top of that, you know, they made it a party. They were handing out pizza. They were handing out refreshments. And then they made sure to have tables that had different services offering support for the LGBTQ plus community, like free mom hugs and organizations like that, which is amazing, because not only are you making a statement, but you're providing a service.
Right, right. And really amazing services. I mean, we had Sarah Cunningham from Free Mom Hugs. She was one of the original Free Mommies huggers who became very famous and went, what do they call that, viral on Facebook because she was offering people whose parents refused to attend their weddings that she would come in and step in as an honorary mom to give them away at their wedding. And it was just beautiful. She's an amazing woman. You know, once upon a time, she was very religious and conflicted about how she felt about the community. And then her son came out to her and she went balls deep.
Yeah.
She changed her life completely. She is a full hard-on, like, LGBTQ plus advocate, and she's doing amazing work with the Free Mom Hugs organization. So
yeah. I will say that he, in his, you know, speech, I think was very vindictive mm-hmm. and purposely said that he wanted to thank Penn State for its generous donation, nearly $18,000 for his attendance and $6,000 for donations and ticket sales. And he is planning to put it towards his conversion therapy clinic.
Who are you kidding, honey? That's going to get you through your next month or two of expenses and your crazy lifestyle. That, again,
that's just so...
That's hush money.
Yeah, of course it is.
It's like a fucking slap in the... He knew he was being protested.
Yeah, of course.
He knew that, like... There were more people outside than there were actually listening. And he had to make a point that, oh, don't worry, I'm going to use this money for my clinic.
All right. You know how sad it must be knowing that there's a large student body and other people outside protesting an event that you're attending, and now you're a student at Penn State that has to walk out and face all these people and live the rest of your tenure at this university knowing that people are going to judge you for the type of events that you chose to participate in and perhaps even contribute to?
Mm-hmm. I don't blame Penn State. I really don't.
No, you can't. I mean, whether we agree or not, it is a state university. Mm-hmm. They have a right to bring any speaker on as long as they go through and pay, you know, whatever fees right. The university requires.
And if I were a student there, I would be upset that he was there, but I would have also been part of that 1,800 people that were there, you know, protesting. But I would walk away with thinking, you know what? The protest was larger than the attendance.
Right.
You know, that is more important. I am more supported by what did you say? Five times more
right.
supported by the student body than the 250 people that were inside this, right. you know, place. What the fuck? It's an arena.
Right.
Inside this arena, listening to this dumbass speak bullshit
and hate. And you know, that causes young children to think of themselves as something less than, that they're not worthy, that they shouldn't be on this earth, that contributes to suicide and, you know, people doing things that technically, you know, they shouldn't be going through this. I mean, you're...
That being said, if I were there, I would be like, I'm not paying my student initiation fee next year. If you're going to bring people like this, I'm not paying it.
Right. But I mean, again, you don't have to pay it. I don't know what consequences come of that.
It's
but.
All like built into your tuition. So like you don't even see it. But like right. I would be pissed off if my money was going towards something like this.
Right.
Literally like gay money, LGBTQ plus money, people in our community, their money is going to conversion therapy now.
Right.
Now I'm pissed off.
Yeah. No. So, It's weird, right? So again, show me who you're with and I'll tell you who you are, that kind of thing, right? And for these 250 students or faculty or whoever it was that participated in this event are now forever for the tenureship of their stay at Penn State will be known as someone who supports, you know, Pray the Gateway.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, interestingly enough. Hi, Ali. Thank you. I was driving down my street, and I don't know if you guys noticed coming here, but my neighbor put up a flag
yes.
across the street. Don't tread on me.
Yeah, the
with the
yellow
snake.
Flag?
Yeah, the yellow flag with the snake on it.
Across the street.
And immediately, I said to myself, oh my God.
What does that mean?
I've spoken to... So don't tread on me. It's like, don't try to step on my rights to liberty... pursuit of happiness about blah blah blah. It's a whole like patriotic thing, but really okay. It isn't, because it's now being used in a way to sort of kind of promote hateful rhetoric from the Republican Party and certain individuals, like our previous dumbass mm-hmm. of a president. And I said, oh my God, I've had amazing conversations with this guy since I've moved here, and all of a sudden this flag goes up. And then today, when I drove out to go have my procedure done, he had a Make America Great hat on.
Wait, yeah. Hold on. Who is this?
Across the street.
Directly?
Yes.
Not my Latinos. Two houses down.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm... Yeah, fine. If you think, you know, we had great conversations, but I can't do with you. I can't engage with you, even if I thought you were nice before I knew this, because you putting that hat on That alone shows me that you are okay with all of the rhetoric that's coming out of that side of the political system, and that those things that are targeted towards our community are okay to do, whether you realize that's what's happening or not.
Yeah.
And I can't associate myself with that. And so that's a hard no.
Like, I feel like, you know, people don't think about
the impact,
but how it affects other people.
Right.
Right. How that hat, how, you know, his statement affects you as a neighbor,
right?
What it means to us.
Right.
Yes. We know that Democrats are far more liberal and that we sit more on social issues than fiscal issues, which is an issue in itself. But the reality is that man literally tried to tear a hole in this country,
right,
and literally scapegoat, for lack of better word, our community, and especially the trans community.
Right. And here he is still trying to like make segue in our community and try to get, you know, some sort of sympathy or support for his potential 2024 run. This is going to be chaotic. 2024, I'm scared.
Oh, like, I just saw an article about somebody invoking the 14th Amendment so that he couldn't run. Merrick Garland.
Probably, okay. Yeah. See, this is why if Chris were here, he could tell us what the 14th Amendment was.
Just a quick tidbit, because I did look up the info. So Don't Tread on Me began on what's known as the Gadsden Flag, G-A-D-S-D-E-N, Gadsden Flag, which features a rattlesnake coiled above the expression in a yellow background. The flag was first flown in a warship in 1775 as a battle of cry for American independence from British rule. So it was used as that. It's used as a patriotic cry against, right, you know, people that feel, you know, they're nationalists. And then with the whole tea era, I try not to say the name, you know,
it became a symbol of sorts.
And it kind of sucks, but I would dare compare it to the swastika. The swastika is originally a Buddhist, it's a Buddhist mantra.
Right.
It's a Buddhist symbol, which Hitler turned into, he actually flipped it around. So it's opposite. It's seen in opposite direction. So it's the opposite of the Buddhist symbol, and turned it into
one of the most recognized hateful symbols on this planet,
which is originally a freaking Buddhist symbol.
Yeah.
And, you know, with this same thing, you know, they took a patriotic symbol and turned it into a hateful.
Right. You know. And the sad thing is that I saw the flag first. I'd never seen him wear that hat before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the one that sits outside and waters his lawn on the chair.
Oh, okay.
Right. Okay.
So I just want to follow up that my comment. So Merrick Garland said that he is citing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which bars anyone from holding office who engaged in insurrection.
Right. And I mean, we've spoken about this before, but remember that they tried doing this while he was still president. But the reason that they were trying to use that as a means to get him out of office weeks before his term was up. But they couldn't, because you can't, you know, prosecute a sitting president under those clauses, and it didn't work.
Well, then he's not a sitting president anymore.
Right. They moved over into impeachment instead, which unfortunately didn't go through in the Senate because of Mitch McConnell. But now that he's no longer president, that actual clause may apply. And I think they've been trying and looking. You have a lot of constitutional scholars that are looking at ways to be able to use that, not only for him, but anyone that participated in that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
So scary. But anyway, back to Milo and how low can you go? And goodbye. You're an asshole.
Fuck off.
So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah.
So, ew, David.
Yeah, in lighter news. So, we all know that I love Dan Levy.
Don't we all?
Schitt's Creek.
Oh.
I'm pretty much Dan Levy. Well,
They based David that character Rose. On you.
I swear to God, I think somebody was like, I'm not joking. I think somebody followed me around and he wrote the character after me.
Right.
Literally the other day I was sitting at work and I was doing something and my coworker in front of me was like, have you ever seen Schitt's Creek? I was like, oh, shut the fuck up. She's like, you're kind of 100% David Rose. I was like, everyone says that, but I appreciate it.
Right. Because you love him.
Oh, my God.
Now, and just to think about how groundbreaking the whole series was, and you're going to get into that, but it's just incredible. So anyway.
Yeah. So he was interviewed by Radio 1 Newsbeat about what, you know, the story meant to him and the LGBT community and why it was so important for him to portray the LGBT community in the way that he did. And he said, a lot of stories I see representing my community are cautionary tales or lessons to be learned or something that's kind of heavy-handed or waterlogged with messaging. Very rare do we see members of the LGBTQI plus community that get themselves represented in a really hopeful and happy way.
Right.
And so for him, the way, you know, he was represented, or him and Patrick or the LGBTQI plus community was represented in the show, was important because it wasn't necessarily about, you know, their sexuality or their whatever. It was about hope. I mean, you start the show off and you see this family that has just been, they fall apart. They lose everything. They're living in a motel. They have nothing. And they came from riches. I mean, they have nothing. And by the end of the season, you know, the family's reconnected. David finds himself and he falls in love.
Right.
And like the individual that he falls in love with was not comfortable with who he was.
Right.
So there's hope and love in that story as well. Like Patrick didn't realize that he could love another man. And through the story and through meeting, you know, David, who anybody that falls in love with a David, you're crazy, but we need the balance.
Or even a Nick, trust me.
We need the balance. But like, you just see how much like, you know, he changes and he loves, and then coming out to his parents on the show and how intense that was, even though they were so supportive. I mean, the way he wrote it and the way he spoke about it in this article, he's 100% right. It's about love and it's about hope. It's not about, you know, a lesson that we learned or something to be aware of or, you know, whatever it is.
It just happened.
Yeah.
Right.
It was natural. And it was in a small fucking town and boom, fuck.
And to think, that their saving grace, that rundown motel, was a gag that the father gave him in his inheritance as a gag. And that was the one thing that the government didn't take away when they lost everything, because they were like, we don't want this fucking hotel. And that was the one thing they had to hang on. And they ended up in Dave's hotel. That was supposed to be his like inheritance prize or something, like a gift.
No, I think it was just a joke.
It was supposed to be a joke.
Yeah.
But
no, well, the father bought the town.
Yes.
Right. Was it the town?
Yeah, yes. He bought the town.
As a joke.
Yeah. And so they had a right to be in the motel because they bought the town.
I can't, but the town was called Schitt's Creek.
Mm-hmm. And then
sign was hilarious.
He did continue to say it's about presenting people for who they are and allowing people to see those people and warm to those people and love those people. And I think that was a really powerful message, because when you meet some of the characters in Schitt's Creek, you would, as a gay guy or bi guy or somebody in the community, some of those characters I would personally be nervous to talk about my sexuality with or share my partnership with. And then you see throughout the process of the show how they just all support one another as a small community, and they don't give a shit.
Right.
And they just love David and they love Patrick and they love the family. And it just like grows from this like, what the fuck, where are we, to this brand new town that's really a family that really supports one another.
Right. And it's a great show. Obviously, you know, it's a fake show. It's a show. It's a scripted show.
It's about my life, but I still haven't found
it's about
my
his
dad.
Life. I mean, ideally, we want this type of thing to happen in every, you know, place in middle America? Yes. Mm-hmm. This is what we would ultimately would like to see, a place where people of all walks of life can feel safe and find community. But the show was groundbreaking in so many ways, in the sense that, like you said, you know, it was portraying our community and people who are part of our community in a way that we weren't necessarily playing the victim.
Yeah, no.
All the time. And then, of course, there were those tender moments. Fuck, man, when Patrick was singing to David and he was just like, he was losing his shit. That was one of my favorite episodes, by the way, when he sang that Simply the Best by Tina Turner on a guitar.
Yes.
And by the way, Patrick, the character who plays Patrick, or the guy that plays Patrick, he's a straight man.
Yeah, and he has his own album out now.
Right. Playing a gay character, or playing, you know, David's love interest. And Dan Levy, obviously, is an openly gay man. His father, you know, Eugene Levy, is an amazing actor with amazing, like, films under his belt. And he's always been a very comedic person. Then, of course, you've got, you know, Moira, who's oh, God, what is her name? The actress's name.
I'm Catherine.
Catherine O'Hara.
Thank you.
O'Hara. Who played the mother in Home Alone, and, you know, has been in so
David.
Many right, in so many iconic
Moira.
Like different types of roles, and it's just all overall a very feel good.
The wedding when she showed up looking like the Pope.
Oh. Life.
or when Alexis, they realize it, we're Alexis both... was about to walk him down the aisle, and she was like, David, I think I am wearing a wedding dress. Yeah. And he's like, I know. This is not about you right now.
Or the time that him and his friend, I forgot what was the character's name.
What's her name?
I don't remember.
Fuck.
Don't ask me.
They both realized they were actually sleeping with the same guy.
Oh, yes.
And when they were in the lobby and she kisses her.
And then
he gets up and kisses him. And they both looked at each other. Wait. You, me? Yeah, that happened. And oh, my God, he was so hot.
Uh-huh.
So it was a good show. It was a good show. And I'm glad that, you know, it got all the accolades that it did, and that it's still making an impact on how queer representation really should be.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, there was, just to wrap it up, they did a Best Wishes, Warmest Regards documentary at the end of the last season. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's great. But they, Dan receives a letter from a group for moms, and basically just kind of saying, like, you know, the way you portrayed these characters and your commitment to represent love and tolerance in your show, it's just new ways for queer viewers to see themselves. And in reading this, he got so emotional.
He broke down.
They described some kind of comfort. He described that in reading this letter, it was like some kind of comfort for him growing up, because it's like, what did he, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was like something about, like, you know, all that crap that we carry, it's like lightening the load.
Right.
And
it's also something that a lot of, you know, comedians in Canada do. His father was very gifted at doing things like that too. So they take comedy in a different way. They're not so visceral about how they go and attack a problem, right? They're very lighthearted about it. And so you can see that lightheartedness in the comedy in the show.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, I want to give him claps, because I think that, you know, he worked so hard to write this script to portray these characters in a certain way and the community in a certain way that it literally affected him physically. Right. He couldn't sleep. He would say that, you know, in a week, I would maybe sleep 8 hours, and he would still record and write all this stuff. But he was just so concerned about how he was representing and portraying the community, because he wanted to serve it correctly. So I just think that that's pretty amazing.
And the fashion too, like some of his fashion sweaters, like, oh my God, it was just like started trending.
Oh, 100%.
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Like, I think you have a couple of sweaters that are,
oh, David Rose all the time.
Yeah. All day long. So nonetheless, it was a good show. We encourage that you watch it. It is available. Is it on Hulu or is it Netflix?
Netflix.
It's on Netflix. It's still available. All seasons. The show at this point has already concluded, but it is a really, really good show, and we recommend that you watch it. You'll enjoy it. All right. Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that story with us.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up, bring it home, call it a day. I want to thank you all for joining us. So I'm going to kick it over to my ladies and gents, or in-betweens, to close it out. So I'm going to toss it over back to Trish, give her some love, because it's now time for Mama Kim's Minute. So here you go.
Thank you. All right, everybody, here's Mama Kim's Minute. Number one, Pete Buttigieg's son spent Halloween in the hospital with his worried dads by his side. Number two, Kids Bop covers Lil Nas X's bottoming anthem, Montero, and removes every hint of anything gay. Number three, LGBTQ candidates won big in the last election last week. Number four, history teacher busted after teaching that Donald Trump was still president.
Lord have mercy. All right. Well, up next is On This Day in Gay History. And of course, because it's Jay, we got to give him a little bit of love, too, because we now have a little love button for him. So here we go.
Wepa.
Yepa.
We gotta shorten this.
There you go.
And on this day in gay history, let me see if I can read, because you know I'm blind today. I left my laptop and all that good stuff.
Oh, she was unprepared today.
Yes, yeah, so okay. Unprepared. PFLAG ads denied on airtime. Denied airtime. I'm sorry. Right. Let me start that over again. PFLAG the ads denied airtime. Yep. When November 8th, 1995, where in the good old U.S. of A, representatives of a Parents and Friends of the Lesbian and Gays approached television stations in four U.S. cities to buy advertisements advertisement time for two ads. One on the prevention of suicide among gay and lesbian youth, and one about gay bashing. All stations refused to air the suicide ad, and only two cable stations and one network-affiliated station would air the gay bashing ad. They were told the ads offended community standards.
Thank God this was back in 1995, because I was losing my shit.
That's not that long ago.
Yeah. Well, 95 was
20 something years ago, dude.
It's almost.
Yeah, 25.
25? About
26.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
When no, I think yeah, about it's 95, a, it's a long time, but
it feels like yesterday to us, all goats.
Right. For you, I mean, you were probably what, like 7?
Look at her. You were playing with Barbies.
Yeah. You were still playing with Ken dolls. Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh. But, you know, I mean.
G.I. Yeah. Joe, the great American hero.
Nick, what are you doing with that G.I. Joe? Don't worry about it, Dad.
Put it down. All right. So, because we do love him. So before we move on and do some of the announcements, I just wanted to quickly mention that Chris sent us a story and he really wanted to make sure that we said a little bit about it on air. So as you know, a long time ago, there was a commission to create a Navy battleship. And it was said that it would supposedly be named after the gay rights activist Harvey Milk. Well, on Saturday, that ship that bears the gay rights activist's name, Harry Milk, was actually released into the San Diego Bay on Saturday, and it is official. We do have a military naval ship that's now named after one of our biggest gay rights icon, Harvey Milk.
Yep, the so. USNS Harvey Milk.
The USNS Harvey Milk. Mm-hmm. So sad that, you know, someone who was removed from office for being who he was and then consequently murdered now bears, you know, we have a ship that's named after him. And that's amazing and incredible.
Yeah.
So That's it. Thank you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation. Those we collect monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. So we appreciate your support. And now I'll toss it over to Jay.
And next week... we don't have a guest, do we, Nick?
Yeah.
We might.
We might.
We might have a guest. We might not.
It might be an all dish episode.
It might be another dish.
Right. Right. All right.
Well, don't blame me. Why are y'all looking at me?
Back Jesus. To Tom. Yeah,
all right. Well, and now here's Nick with a weekly reminder for all of you bottoms out there who want to keep their buttholes on point. Yes, we are talking about future method.
You got it.
Here you go.
Thank you. All right, get the future method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. Visit futuremethod.com to purchase your life-changing bum cleanser, moisturizer, whatever you need today.
Did we mention the probiotics?
And the probiotics.
And the probiotics. All right. Jay?
And I guess it's time to put a rubber on it.
A rubber on it. We're putting a rubber on it tonight.
She's feeling safe.
Yeah.
Go for it.
It's time to put a ring on it. I like that better.
Yeah,
our better show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under audio podcast. It is also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.
And I still get a kick at how you make podcast. I hear you say podcast.
Podcast.
You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gaytalk 2.0, Instagram, Gaytalk 2.0, Twitter at Gaytalk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gaytalk20.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website. Click on the Contact Us tab. There you can actually leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a question via voice message. We can answer those for you on the show. The phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. Or if you need all those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget, we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. With that, ladies and gents and everyone in between, thank you so much, and y'all have a good night.
Bye! Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.